All right, welcome everyone. Another quick turnaround edition of the Horsing Around podcast. Andy Lindahl and Andrew Mason hanging with you. A lot of good response, Andrew, before we get to our camp preview to everybody talking about the championship teams or the non-championship teams, I guess I should say. But a lot of fun debate in that one, and we enjoy everybody's feedback on that. So thank you for playing along. But it is time to talk about the 2017 version of the Denver Broncos. And on Thursday, we start figuring out who's going to maybe make up this roster aside from the quarterbacks, because you and I know that's going to dominate the conversation. Where are some of the positions that you think hold key battles that maybe we haven't focused on as much this offseason because this town loves to talk quarterbacks?
Well, it's interesting because if you didn't have the quarterbacks, you'd be talking about the left tackles. And when you build a team, you usually start quarterback, pass rusher, left tackle. So in a lot of situations, the left tackle battle would be the big headline competition. But because you have Trevor Siemian against Paxton Lynch, it's kind of an afterthought. But what happens at left tackle is going to be almost as important, at least for what happens with the Broncos this year. Now Garrett Bowles and Tyson Brillo, they were splitting the reps on the first team by the minicamp, which was the last week of offseason work. And I think at some point, Garrett Bowles is going to win the job outright. I mean, although they've been pleased with how Tyson Brillo has done this offseason, the fact that he's gotten back to full strength for the first time in 2 years and has held his own, Bowles seems to be coming on strong and has developed a bit faster than expected. You alluded to that in our previous podcast. And I think he's going to have the job at some point. It may well be very soon, but it's no slam dunk, and I think that competition may linger for a little bit in camp. And so I think you start with that one. And then, kind of continuing with the theme of the offense in the passing game, number three receiver is going to be right there. And then tight end is going to be a competition. So really, you're looking at not just the quarterback, but other aspects of the passing game, both in protection and in terms of targets, as having key competition. So really, the multiple facets of the Broncos' air attack are in a little bit of a tumult right now. It's going to take some time to sort them out.
I'll tell you another position that no one's talking about that I'm curious to see how it all shakes out. I liked what I saw to Devontae Booker at points during this camp. I'm curious to see how he runs in his second year, because I know some people remember the negative stuff on him, which I do find interesting. He missed a couple blitz pickups in Gary Kubiak's scheme. He had a fumble at the beginning of the year that certainly wasn't advantageous to him. But that's a kid that ran hard. That's a kid that delivered blows. That's a kid that I think, frankly, hit the traditional rookie wall. And I know everyone's talking Jamal Charles and C.J. Anderson right now, and I am curious to see how C.J. works in this offense, and I don't know what to expect out of Jamal Charles, but excited to see how those knees are doing for him anyway. But I really don't think people ought to be giving up on Devontae Booker, because I think this is a kid in this Mike McCoy offense. I know we're all worried about the short passing game, and it'll be built around that, but I think Mike McCoy and you bring in Jeff Davidson, the old Bronco offensive lineman, you still got to be able to run the football. And as we talk about quarterbacks and their security and how well they play, Andrew, I still think there has to be some kind of run game. And at least, look, don't forget Melvin Gordon really starting to become a star in this league. And I wouldn't be opposed if you could find, I'm not saying that Devontae Booker or CJ is Melvin Gordon necessarily, but I'd like to see them have some impact in the running game. One more little facet that could really help this team.
Well, there have been some years with Mike McCoy when he was out in San Diego where he really did have the running back by committee approach, and there were other years like last year where Gordon carried a pretty heavy load and did so pretty effectively. It'll be interesting to see what approach McCoy takes this year, but I could see a situation where you have C.J. Anderson and Devontae Booker almost as 1 and 1A, at least in a base package type situations, and then Jamal Charles maybe ends up as a third down back.
Yeah, and in space, Jamal Charles will be scary.
Yeah, and then the question becomes, if Jamal Charles is your third down back, is he still effective in at blitz pickup when he has to be involved in pass protection, given the injuries that he has, since he'll be physical enough in that regard? That's the question that he has, but he's certainly done that in the past.
Okay, so I agree with you about the battle at left tackle. I'm not quite sure I know who the team's right tackle is, although I think we're all hoping that it's Menelik Watson. I'm pretty sure the team center is Matt Paradis, but I can't tell you 100%. And I don't know who plays the other guard position from Ronald Leary. It may be Max Garcia, and if that's the case, Ronald's likely right and Max is left. But I'm not 100% sure. So again, there's really battles up and down the line to be had. I mean, how do you think that group looks when we get to the LA Chargers?
Well, I think definitely Leary is going to be one of the going to have one of the spots. Right now, it's right guard, and I don't know if it's prudent to move him back to left guard if he ends up working all of training camp at right guard, because whoever works at left guard, that guy will be working next to whoever your left tackle is, be it Garrett Bowles or Tyson Brawley. It could be an interesting situation, because let's say Max Garcia struggles, and let's say Tyson Brawley continues to make a pretty good acquittal of himself. Maybe he's not your left tackle, but what if he ends up swinging inside the guard, because he was going to be in the mix at guard last year, remember? And then ended up not getting the job. Michael Schofield ended up starting, and then Cimbrello was bounced outside back to tackle. So Cimbrello could be back in the mix at guard before all is said and done. You know, you've heard Vance Joseph say he wants to get the best five on the field. Mike McCoy will say that same thing as well, I'm sure, because they want to get the best five. What if your best five happens to include two guys who are competing at tackle right now? Then maybe you swing one of them in the guard.
See, it makes sense to me. It's not something that I'd rule out for certain. You could be relying on some surprise rookies. Who knows? We don't know what's going to happen, as you said, at the third wide receiver spot. I think Carlos Henderson is a guy they wouldn't mind seeing win that job, although Cody Latimer, despite the reports, you know, from the past week, is from the off-field stuff. By all accounts, he's had a very good offseason, and though people should know that the stuff on Cody was way early in the offseason, and so he's worked hard since he's gotten back. So maybe he wins that third job. You know, I still like Jordan Taylor. We'll see what happens with Jordan Taylor. You know, where does he go? Does he fit on this team? On and on and on. I guess I bring all this up as we talk about, you know, where people are battling for jobs and so on and so forth. Andrew, realistically, with all we just laid out, and pretty much there's not many set positions on this offensive side of the ball, how long do you think Bronco fans may have to wait before they could see a cohesive offense? I'm sure it won't be perfect this year. Rarely in the first year is any offense as perfect as anybody wants it to be. But a cohesive functioning group, how long do you think it could be before we see that?
Wow, I think you might be talking about midseason. And maybe at some point on that three-game road swing at L.A., at Kansas City, at Philadelphia, maybe that, even though you'd think, boy, a road swing, that could be some tough sledding, but that may be the point where you start seeing the offense perhaps come together and mature. I mean, that's, you know, those are games 6, 7, 8 on schedule. You have some good pass rushers in that mix, but you also by then will have an offense that will have been tested against some pretty good defenses to that point. I know something that you know, that has been discussed quite often is the potential for Jake Butt, if he is ramping up to speed, to be incorporated more into the offense by then, and perhaps be a little bit of a game changer in terms of what he can bring, even if he's only in on a limited basis and he's completing his recovery from a torn ACL. That's when I think you may start seeing some consistency from the offense, is somewhere around late October, early November. I think before then, you're going to have to live with some fits and starts, and especially if you have Garrett Bowles at left tackle. You know, you're going to have to live with mistakes of intensity and, you know, nastiness, as it were. I mean, that's the primary attribute that he brings to the table is, you know, effort, physicality. You know, it's been described often as nastiness, but that's going to boil over sometimes into some penalties. You know, we know about all the penalties that he took at the University of Utah last year. And sometimes he may resort to grabbing a little more often than you'd like, and that's something that if you start him at left, well, you're going to have to live with from time to time, and that's part of the equation of a young offense, a new scheme, incorporating quite a few new players. I know it's frustrating for Broncos fans. I know Broncos fans don't want to hear that. You know, they'd love for things to be smooth right out of the gates. I'm sure they are. I'm sure the players and coaches would love for things to be smooth right out of the gates, but it just doesn't work that way, especially when you take a look at the offensive line. There's a decent chance that you may be looking at a line group that has only Nat Paravis starting at his previous position from last year and has changes all over the rest of the unit. And if that's the case, it's going to take time for that part of the offense alone to find cohesion.
Well, and I'm not saying they won't be able to score points, and I don't think you are either, but it really, you know, and I know a good offense is able to do it consistently, drive to drive. It may look in the early going, if not the first half of the season, and I agree with you, I think anytime there's a new offense, you're just hoping everything starts to click in everybody's head by the middle of the season as you get a feel for each other, and that also is factoring in not a lot of injuries that's changing that chemistry up that you're talking about as well. One here and there, I think you can survive, but if you get a slew of injuries on that side of the ball and you're flipping guys in and out and everyone's trying to restart again, that's tough. But I think it could look like last year. We have some drives where it just goes, and then there's other drives where maybe it doesn't, you know. I was always amazed at Josh McDaniels when he was here, how quickly his offense did seem to kind of settle in, and they were able to move the ball at least in that first six games. Now, unfortunately, they couldn't get points when they needed it after that first six games of his first season in 2009. But
there were some great defensive performances at the start of that year, though, that made that possible. I mean, you held Cincinnati to single digits. You held, it was in Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Oakland, all the single digits right out of the blocks, and then held Dallas to 10 points, and then held, I think New England was below 20 in the middle of that. So the defense, Mike Nolan's defense, really was carrying the load for that team early on. The offense wasn't all that consistent when it started. Actually, the offense probably was at its best for Josh McDaniels early to mid-2010, his second year. But by then, the defense was terrible, decimated by injuries, just couldn't stop anybody.
Well, and he made a mistake of getting sideways with Mike Nolan and not keeping a very good veteran defensive coordinator around. That's the ego mistake of a young coach. But look, what you just laid out is what we could be looking at, because I'm not quite sure what the offense could surprise us. I mean, I think if the quarterback's Trevor Siemian, and I believe that's probably who wins the job out of camp if I'm putting my money down right now, he does have chemistry with some of these guys that he'll be throwing the ball to, so that's a good thing. And if you can give him some protection and something that looks like a running game, the offense could very easily surprise in the early going, and maybe we're not having some of these growing pains that you and I are talking about. But all that said, likely the defense is going to be relied on to do what you just talked about and do what they've basically been asked to do the last couple of years. But I'll tell you what, Andrew, again, injuries can change everything. They can make seasons. They can ruin a season. But if this defense stays healthy, the Domantas Pekos, the Zach Kerrs, bringing back the no-fly zone, I just honestly believe, I think Shane Ray is ready for a big jump. I hope I'm right. Hopefully he gets Shaq Barrett back in that mix fairly quickly. The kid they got, you're going to have to help me out. The kid they got from New Orleans that could be a little bit of a pass rusher.
Kasim Edebali, hasn't played a lot of snaps in his career, but a very efficient pass rusher. And they're kind of looking at him as a Dakota Watson type, a guy who could be a reserve, contribute on special teams. But with Shaq Barrett hurt, they're going to ask a little more of him. He may well be able to deliver. There's some potential there for him.
You got a DeMarcus Walker, the rookie. Now, I try not to get too excited about rookies, especially along the line, because it's a different game from college to the pros, and you're dealing with, you know, grown men who are paid and know how to stop you from making the move you want to make first. So you've got to always have that plan B, I've been told. But look, there's an exciting kid if he shows some growth and gets some things developed. I think this defense could be elite again. I really do. I don't think it's too much to expect. I don't know that we'll ever see 2015 again, but I think they could be better than they were even a year ago.
Well, certainly they could. The key thing is the run defense has got to be good enough to where you force teams to throw and you force teams to throw at your corners. Toward the end of last season, teams didn't have to worry about the Broncos against the run. They could run at them, and then when they had to throw, they could keep it short and they could avoid the corners. Just look at what the Patriots did in Week 15. You know, Chris Harris Jr. and Aqib Talib, you know, they really didn't have a lot to do because Tom Brady barely looked in their direction and basically took the two of the best cornerbacks in football out of the game because he, frankly, didn't even have to test them. So you've got to force opponents in situations where they're going at the Broncos' strength, forced to deal with the strength. Those two guys on the corners, and then your edge rushers in Von Miller and Shane Ray. And that means you've got to defend the run, and you've got to get it out in front, force the quarterbacks to look downfield, look to throw at those corners, which means the quarterbacks are holding the ball a little bit longer, allowing the edge rushers to have more of an impact in the pass rush. They can make plays, and everything happens. That's the equation you're looking for. If the Broncos can do that, then they're probably going to be in pretty good shape. A big part of that is defending the run. A big part of that on offense is having enough balance and being productive. I think, frankly, if this offense, just the offense itself, the offense can account for 20 points a game in these first five games, I think that may be enough to get this team to 4-1.
Well, and I think they need to get to 4-1 because, as you and I have harped on since the schedule came out, things are not kind to the Broncos. Matter of fact, if you listen to my Orange Herd podcast, I'm not going to lie to you, Andrew. I cried about the schedule. I don't know what we did to someone in the league office, but I hate how unfair this seems to be for the Broncos this year. I just don't like it. How you get the early bye in the late Thursday night game in Indy in December when it's not a divisional team like we're traditionally told it's supposed to be for those Thursday nighters. Just kind of irritates me how the Broncos' schedule falls, but you got to play the way they set them up for you, and that's what they've had set up for them. We'll continue to dive into all that and give you some more impressions of camp coming up on Thursday after, well, it'll be Friday. People get to listen to it after we see the first day. But maybe the big first move of camp, something people were waiting for, John Elway signs a 5-year extension with the team today. Now, I applaud the move. I'm excited by the move. You tell me, Andrew, you're inside that building. Maybe I didn't have my hand on the pulse of this. I never felt like John Elway would leave for another team. I feel like John Elway is Mr. Bronco. I wasn't worried whether they got it done this year or not because they had all next offseason to work on it too. Not that you wanted it to go there, but you didn't have to get it done this year. And sometimes it takes, we always hear, you got to have a deadline when you're working on these kind of things. It happened with Von Miller. It happens with CBAs. It happened with Demaryius Thomas. Were you worried this ever wasn't going to get done? I got to be honest with you. I never was really overly concerned that John Elway wouldn't be a part of this team.
Not particularly worried at all, no, to be honest with you. And the thing is, you sometimes hear negotiations with players, oh, we've got to get this done before the season. You've heard that said, and yet you look at the Broncos the last 2 years, they've gotten some contracts done during the season, some player deals. They got, you know, Emmanuel Sanders was done right around the start of the regular season. Darian Stewart was done in November of last year. Chris Harris Jr. was done in December of 2014, I believe. So it's, you know, sometimes you get some. So, you know, the notion that you have to have things done by a specific time, other than, you know, the start of the league year or the expiration of a contract itself, you know, that's you know, a little bit hackneyed, I'd say. So, but I wasn't really worried about it. I mean, he's got so much of his life invested in the Broncos and in Denver, Colorado. I mean, he couldn't go elsewhere and have the same kind of presence, the same kind of situation that he would have with the Broncos and in Denver. It made too much sense for all parties to get this done. So I just figured it was a matter of time. And I think the 5-year length of it, so it's, you know, 5 seasons, obviously, through the 2021 season, but, you know, 5 years would take him through, you know, through mid-2022. And the reason why I bring that up is the year 2021 is going to be a very interesting year in the NFL because the CBA will expire before the 2021 season. So that's the year you're looking at perhaps some kind of stoppage if the NFL and the Players Association cannot come to agreement on a new collective bargaining agreement in time. And if and when a new agreement comes, and there will be agreements, I should say when, but you know, it might be after another stoppage, even off-season one, as it was back in 2011, the landscape might look a little bit different. Certainly the landscape looked a bit different after the 2011 CBA. So you have John Elway under contract for, you know, the 2021 season and into the 2022 calendar year. That's very helpful to have him on a deal that goes, you know, beyond the start of a new CBA to potentially help the Broncos through what could be some very tricky waters for all teams as they navigate what could be a very different looking landscape as they come out, as they go into a new CBA after that. So I thought the length of the contract, I thought that meant something as well, and probably good for the Broncos to have him locked up through that and have him guide the team through what could be a very interesting few months and year right there.
Yeah, if just to explain what we're talking about too, if you've missed the player rhetoric, it is of course that they're going to have to strike because they want contracts that resemble more the NBA, a lot more money, a lot shorter length, so on and so forth, and
a lot more guaranteed money. That's the big thing. It may not be more necessarily more money in terms of when you see 4 years, $40 million, but what they want is guaranteed money, and that certainly affects every team's bottom line because when you have a guarantee. That means you have to put that money in escrow right away to make sure, obviously, that you can that you are set and able to pay that contract. So that certainly affects how a lot of teams would do business. And so that, you know, if more money was guaranteed or a higher percentage of contracts was guaranteed, or if they were totally guaranteed as they are in the NBA and Major League Baseball, that would certainly be a pretty dramatic change to the NFL's economic landscape.
Yeah, and things only get more interesting from there. I guess final note on this podcast, and again, we've got plenty to talk about. We will encourage you to tune into Denver Sports 760 coming up on Thursday. I think you'll be very pleased with the coverage you'll find at Broncos training camp then, and we'll talk more about that coverage and so on and so forth as we get there. But a lot of local coverage coming your way on Denver Sports 760 AM on the dial and on iHeartRadio. Look for 760. But anyway, Andrew, it's going to be a lot. We're going to be talking a lot about the quarterbacks, as we said. I don't feel any more need really to go into it tonight. But as we've talked about John Elway, and I just want to get this out there on the record. I think I know your answer. I know strongly how I feel about it. I don't claim to know John Elway well, but I've covered John Elway since he's been an executive back in the Arena Football League. A lot of people are floating out there. They think Paxton Lynch may ultimately be the starter simply because he was John Elway's draft pick. To me, I don't think John Elway forces anybody to play any player based on where he chose to draft him. That's not the John Elway I know. He does not care about our opinions as to whether something was a good draft pick, bad draft pick, so on and so forth in the media. And he doesn't lose sleep over whether we think, you know, whether he's got to shove his first-round quarterback in there just to prove he was right. I don't think that's how he functions. I think that's why this team and this franchise has been so successful for so long. You don't have a Chris Harris here, if not. Do you believe that Elway's ego plays into this quarterback competition at all?
I don't. A couple of things. Number one, you mentioned Chris Harris Jr. And Chris actually tweeted out on Monday night about John Elway's willingness to keep the best guys, regardless of draft position, being undrafted, whatever. praise, you know, basically thank John Elway for giving him a legitimate chance to make the team and contribute, to let him have that shot on equal terms. The other thing with Elway, and you mentioned the Arena Football League, you know, the example I've cited with Elway not having an ego about decisions he makes is how he handled the aftermath of that first Colorado Crush season in 2003 when they went 2-14, and you know, he hired Bob Beers, someone that he and his father had known for decades, went back many years with, and had to make a very difficult decision to fire Bob Beers at the end of that year. I mean, it was a bad season, but he didn't let ego get in the way. He didn't let friendship get in the way. He made the move that had to be made. He junked his initial plan, went in a completely different direction, got a lot of good advice from people who had been around arena football longer than he had, you know, got some good recommendations, hired Mike Daly. Daly changed the coaching staff, brought in a few different players, kept some holdovers, and it was like night and day, 180 degrees. The Crush went from 2-14 to 11-5 in 1 year, and then the year after that they were winning an arena football championship. And that's why I don't think John Elway is going to be locked in by the ego of where a player was picked. He's going to make the best move for the team. And he's also, having been a player, he knows that if one quarterback is better than the other, that you have to play that guy, because you can't go into that locker room and sell a lesser quarterback or a lesser player in any position to the entire team, especially if you're trying to say this is a meritocracy. Because if the lesser player is starting, everyone in that room is going to see right through that. In that way, as a player, as a former player, understands that better than anybody.
Well, we get it all going on Thursday, so we're just a few days away. We appreciate you tuning in again to the Horsing Around podcast. Andrew, before we sign off for the night, some exciting news. Maybe people missed it. I know it was huge on social media, but Steve Atwater joining the crew here at DenverBroncos.com. Obviously one of my favorite player of all time, but a guy that is going to be very visible on the site coming up.
Yeah, in fact, I can tell you he's going to be a daily part of the training camp wrap-up shows that we're going to have on Broncos TV, on DenverBroncos.com. He'll be watching practice very closely with a former player's educated eye, and we'll be pointing out the players that he thinks are doing well from day to day. And we do a lot of other stuff for the organization as well, not just doing stuff for the website, but really cool. I mean, it's just been great to talk to him. I mean, Steve's one of my favorite guys that I've ever dealt with covering the game, and just talking around the building and being with him in meetings the last week or so. It's been wonderful, and I'm really excited to be on camera with him. You know, help and have him, you know, on podcast and whatever we end up doing, and you know, obviously his role is going to grow. So I'm pretty pumped, and of course, you know, how many more people are more beloved than Steve Atwater in Broncos history? I mean, he's probably, you know, he may not be at the top of the list, but it doesn't take long to call the roll, as I think when Bum Phillips said.
Well, I'll tell you this: you're right. I love that line. It is a short roll call. I would say this, it's going to be an exciting season on DenverBroncos.com, and I think it's safe to say more coverage than you've ever seen right here on the site, so you're going to want to keep it here. We again appreciate you listening to the Horsing Around podcast. For Andrew Mason, I'm Andy Lindahl. We will check in with you after day one on Thursday. Till then, take care.